Welcome to Keep the Ball Rolling, presented by Tommy Media. On today's show, we wrap up the Olympics and talk about some of our favorite moments. We sit down with St. Thomas men's basketball coach John Tower and women's basketball coach Ruth Sin to talk basketball and the NCAA FBI investigation. And we finish with a Tommy Sports update.
Wow.
An absolutely USA chant-worthy moment there.
USA! USA! Gosh, that just gets you pumped up, doesn't it?
Chad Salmela is the NBC commentator who is losing his mind down the stretch.
Absolutely losing it.
Yes!
I love it.
Yes! Yes!
There goes Diggins!
There goes Diggins! Unbelievable moment. An electric moment for the Olympics.
If you're ever having a tough day, tough morning, just listen to that to help pick you up, because wow. That is electric stuff.
In the Olympics this year, were so many good moments like that, from the women's hockey to Diggins winning the gold to Shaun White. One of my favorite moments of the Olympics, Shaun White on the last run of the halfpipe throws down a 97-75 to win the gold in likely his last Olympics and his last Olympic run. Incredible moment there.
Mm-hmm. Also, U.S. women's hockey, of course. Their 3-2 shootout against Canada. Winning gold for the first time since 1988 was a big deal. You know, there were six Minnesotans on that team. For me personally, my sister is a hockey player here in Minnesota. So for her to, you know, witness the team win gold was huge for her. And it was awesome to see.
Yeah, the first gold in 20 years, I think, for Canada's won every other gold.
Yeah, Canada
since 98.
Yep, had beat the U.S. in 2002. 2010 and 2014, so, you know.
And I think part of that moment that made it so electric was that it was at 2 in the morning that we won, and it was in overtime in a shootout. You know, I mean, people are saying, like, oh, the shootout, it's so exciting. Like, I know hockey, like, pure hockey purists don't love that.
Everyone was staying up in this day, too.
Yeah,
but everyone's staying up to watch that.
Exactly. The hockey purists don't love that end on a shootout, but as a casual hockey fan, that was the best way a gold medal could have been won for me. I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my roommates and I were watching. Some of them were sleeping. Everybody in the house was woken up after that shootout win. An incredible, incredible moment. And the Olympics were so awesome this year. I absolutely loved them.
I saw on Instagram, too, that ESPN was saying this was called redemption. You know, the miracle on ice back in the day when the U.S. won gold. For the men's team, they're calling this one redemption. So I thought that was pretty cool to see, too.
Lauren, favorite moment from the Olympics?
Oh, my gosh. There were so many. Well, first of all, I'm a big figure skating fan. And I think everybody is, because you don't really get many opportunities other than the Olympics to, like, watch figure skating, especially at its best. So this year, you know, every Olympic season, they've got to outdo the last season. And this year, there were so many competitors who the females were standing with their blades on top of the men's legs, which is just, like, defying, like, everything we know about, like, ice skating.
Blades of Glory. Have you ever seen that?
Exactly.
Movie?
I know. What is their trick that they do at the end?
What is it called? I forget.
I don't remember.
Ridiculous. So.
Where he, like, just shaves, like, the hair off of Will Ferrell's face. I'm waiting for that's probably, 2022. We'll see that. No, but my favorite was when Canada and Germany tied for men's luge. And it's, like, the first time ever that there's been a tie for gold. And instead of, like, kind of being sad because Germany kind of takes the gold all the time in luge, they just went up and all hugged. They were all just so happy, just, like, congratulated each other at the finish line. And I think that's just, like, the pinnacle of what the Olympics is, you know? Everyone gets to go home with gold. So that was probably one of my favorite moments.
Yeah, and a good thing about the Olympics is you watch these sports like curling and figure skating that you don't see for 4 years, and then you turn it on and you're like, this is awesome. And you watch it, and then I'm pretty much good for 4 years on figure skating and curling. So in 4 years, I'll be ready to go. But for now, I mean, I'm pretty satisfied with the content from the Olympics.
All right, so we had an interview with Coach Tower, the men's basketball coach, and Coach Sin, the women's basketball coach here at St. Thomas. And, you know, I really enjoyed this interview because we have the locker room here at Tommy Media, the locker room show that we do mainly every week, where we talk sports with these coaches. We talk about their seasons, we talk about their stats, we talk about their players. But, you know, this interview, we really got to go in depth and kind of look at what they are like behind the scenes. So I know I really enjoyed this interview. Brady enjoyed this interview, and I'm excited for you guys to hear it.
We're now joined in studio by Coach John Tower and Coach Ruth Sin. Thank you guys for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So first question here, before we jump into, you know, you guys coaching and maybe your playing careers, when did you first fall in love with the game of basketball, and how did that happen?
For me, my dad was a eighth grade basketball coach for probably 25 years. So he worked in mutual funds for Piper Jaffray, but I just started tagging along at the gym with him when I was probably 5 or 6 years old. And really, I think it was a combination of, you know, the game of basketball and being curious about that, but also getting to hang out with eighth graders that when you're a kindergartner, those are, you know, kings of the world to you. Mm-hmm. And getting to spend a lot of time with my dad. So that really was my childhood. I didn't play a lot of basketball on teams until I was probably fourth or fifth grade, but mm-hmm. my whole youth was spent up at Nativity Grade School. And my dad still likes to joke that he had me jump in a drill in first grade, and I took a charge, and he claims that's the last charge I've ever taken. Some big eighth grader ran over me, and he's like, after that, you decided to be an outside shooter.
That's funny. And for me, my story is kind of interesting because I attended St. Pete's grade school, and I was going to be a cheerleader. Oh. So it was seventh grade, and that was, you wanted to be a cheerleader. So I tried out, and I didn't make it, and I was just devastated. And St. Pete's didn't have a basketball team. And so my mom, seeing how broken up I was, she called the principal, and they formed a basketball team. Wow. And they got a coach, and it was actually a neighborhood a dad of ours. And we formed the first St. Pete's grade school team, and wow. I fell in love with it. Things happen for a reason.
That's
and
awesome.
So it was kind of, thank heavens I got cut from cheerleading, because it really has worked out well for me.
For sure.
With March Madness right around the corner, I want to give you guys a blind resume. You guys see this on, like, they do this on ESPN when they're trying to do, like, the bracketology. They give two resumes. So I'm going to give you guys two players, and I want you guys to pick. No peeking at my screen, Coach Sin. So we have two players here. I want you guys to pick which one you'd want on your team more. We have one who's 14th in career scoring, 15th in career rebounding, and 6th on the MIAC all-time list for three-point baskets. That's our first player. Second player, top 12 in career steals, assists, and block shots. Which one is more impressive?
I want the one who steals and passes and block shots. That's all the dirty work. The other person kind of sounds soft and like a prima donna.
Yeah. So that first person was you, Coach Tower. You picked Coach Sin.
Absolutely. I want the tough, gritty Coach Sin. I don't need me floating around on the perimeter.
I thought my shooting percentage wasn't that bad. So, funny. Oh, what a riot. I think both Coach Tower and I value any time we have tough players that they're willing to go out and dive on the floor and do whatever they can. And that's, I think, one of the things that we really enjoy about our program was when our kids dare greatly like that.
Mm-hmm. And especially when you can have two head coaches that played in the MIAC and that played here. It's a special thing.
Yeah, I think this university certainly is a place where we learned a tremendous amount of student athletes, and, you know, both the desire to give back to the university but also to help mentor student athletes the same way we were mentored. I think for both of us, that's a part of our jobs we really cherish.
Yeah, we always talk about that. The game is fun and exciting, and it's passionate, but the real win in the situation is the people that our athletes become in the process. And we were mm-hmm. fortunate enough to have coaches that helped us learn those lessons through the sport of basketball and really help mold us to who we are today.
For sure. And how do you guys use what you learned as players in your coaching today?
You know, one of the things I think that we do is we really try to put ourselves in their shoes. Mm-hmm. In my experience, it's not that our girls don't want to do what we're asking. It's that they don't understand. I mean, we've got some tremendous young ladies in our program, and mm-hmm. so we're always trying to communicate better so they can fully understand. Because once they understand it, then they can go all out with it. So I think one of the things that we've done is really just tried to make sure that we're communicating a lot with them to empower them.
For sure.
I think along those lines, you know, creating a vision for someone too that Ruth's talking about, people don't always know who they could become. And I think oftentimes as coaches, we may have a more crystallized view of who somebody could become, not just on the court, but off the court. And that's not always easy to do when you're an 18-year-old and you probably just came off of being all state in high school and everybody in school knew you, and you get to college and very few people know you, and you might be struggling in practice against juniors and seniors. And as coaches, I think we can see, hey, this is a normal part of the progression. But as a freshman in college, that can be really overwhelming and daunting. And so I think a big part of our job is how do we help those freshmen and sophomores through those, you know, ups and downs, and get them to actually embrace them and look at it as, you know, not an easy part of life, but certainly incredibly valuable part.
Yeah, and that's so true. I mean, when we talk all the time, it's you know, challenges make us who we are. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times people try to avoid challenges and they avoid adversity, and we talk about it, it's opportunity, and that's mm-hmm. how you grow.
For sure. Having played here, do you guys consider yourself like player coaches, or do you consider yourself more as a disciplinarian? Or what type of coach are you guys?
You know, I think that the player coach oftentimes is a misnomer, because it either connotes that you're soft or that other types of approaches players wouldn't respect. I think the big thing, and I think Ruth does this as well, I think much like a parent, you try and balance love and discipline, that you want players to know you're there for them and you support them, but at the same time, you're not their friend that's hanging out with them. You're somebody who's trying to guide and help them develop. And so I think you better be a player coach in this generation in terms of connecting with your players, understanding where they're coming from. And I also don't think, you know, sort of the stereotypical authoritarian coach who yells and screams and swears, I mean, that doesn't fly in this day and age for a lot of good reasons, right? Mm-hmm. Not to mention most kids aren't raised that way by their parents today, and they're not coached that way in middle school and high school. So I don't think you see a whole lot of that at the higher levels even in this day and age, primarily because players aren't used to it and it's not going to go over well.
One of the things that we talk about a lot of times is the difference between the player and the number. You know, in our program, Lucia Renikoff is number 10. And Lucia Renikoff, we absolutely love and adore the person who she is. Mm-hmm. But number 10, our job and our responsibility is to make number 10 the best that she can be. And sometimes it's pushing them beyond those limits, like John was saying, and showing the vision that we have to get to, because our goal is to maximize their full potential individually and collectively. And so we really try to differentiate. I had a player one time that I came to her. This was when I was back in high school, and I said, Allie, you know, you have to understand, I want 42 to be the best that she can be. I know there's times that you're going to get upset, but that's my job. Mm-hmm. And she turned to me and she said, okay, I get it, coach. I get it, coach. And I love, you know, I get that. But I'm really mad right now at coach. Not at Roussin, but at coach right now. It's like, as long as you get it. As mm-hmm. long as you get it. Because that's what's going to happen. I mean, we have to give them challenges, and we have to get them seeing the struggle and how to overcome it. That's when they're going to become their best. Because mm-hmm. that's what happens in the game. I mean, they've got to be ready to embrace challenges.
Yeah. And when you guys look at each other's programs, obviously, you guys have both seen a lot of success as coaches. What do you admire most about, you know, the other's program?
Well, I think with Ruth's program, you know, when you watch them play, they're tenacious on defense. They're mm-hmm. really selfless. They're incredibly hardworking. And I think the other thing that's really impressive is how much better they get over the course of their careers, whether it's Caitlin Langer, who a lot of people hadn't heard about, mm-hmm. and she ends up being the National Player of the Year, and then this year Hannah Spaulding, who a lot of people hadn't heard about, and because she was behind Caitlin, mm-hmm. and she's shooting over 70%, and her numbers look like a video game, and mm-hmm. yeah. and you say, how in the world did they come this far? And you know, a lot of it's the coaching, a lot of it is the individual doing the work, but a lot of it is the culture in the program, where if you have the opportunity to play behind an All-American and National Player of the Year as a freshman and sophomore, you have no choice but to get better. So even those days that I'm sure Hannah went home some days as a freshman and sophomore thinking, I don't know if I can ever do this. And all of a sudden she's a junior and she's doing many of the same things. And I think, you know, in both of our programs, we really strive. Ryan Sarla was another example of a guy like that for us, who in 2013, he sat the bench. In fact, I was just showing one of our freshman posts the other day. they played more this year than Ryan did as a freshman, and he was on a Final Four team behind Tommy Hannon, who was an All-American. Well, by the time Ryan's a senior, he's the guy who's leading us in scoring in the national championship game, but people forget that, hey, Ryan Saar as a freshman didn't play, and as a sophomore, he averaged about 5 points and four rebounds a game and didn't pass and catch very well, and as a junior, he's all-conference, and as a senior, he's as good as anybody in the country. And so I think that's one of the many things we admire about Ruth's program is her players are really selfless, they're hardworking, but they also buy into completely this process of getting better for the good of the team and individual growth.
And that's what I would say about John's program, exactly mm-hmm. the same. I mean, if you take a look at their teams, they share the ball. It doesn't matter who scores, it matters that St. Thomas scores. You look at their great teams, the two teams that won the national championship, or the one team that won the national championship under John, it was just whoever can get the better opportunity. They handled every adverse situation with poise and confidence, and I've been amazed at how they can minimize turnovers. That it was one of the things that I'm always asking him about, because they do such a good job of just turning down tough plays and making easy plays. But they all grow within the program, and you look at that. Tommy Hanna didn't even play at Creighton. He didn't even have a high school career, but their coaching staff saw that we could bring this person up and we can show him what he can become. Same thing with Ryan. And then you look at their guard play and how they just shared. There was Cortez. And then, I mean, it's just amazing how they all buy into the culture and the system and the good of the whole. It doesn't matter who scores, that they all are just there to support each other. And so I really like the culture that they've established and how it's all for the good of the group.
And recently in the NCAA, we've heard, you know, week after week about the FBI investigations into paying the players and that kind of scandal that's going on. What is your guys' reaction to that investigation?
Yeah, I it saddens me. It just really saddens me, because that's not why any of us got in. You led. The first question you asked is about why we play and mm-hmm. the passion and the enjoyment and you know, through the process as coaches, that passion and enjoyment has gone to serve others. And it's really sad that I all the outside distractions, the money and the influence and the ego has gotten into the way to take away the true essence of why we do what we do. And I'm really sad that something like that has to happen.
Yeah, sad, disappointment, you know, and kind of disgusted in the sense that ethically, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, we're all about the student athletes, and when you hear some of the allegations, you know, it certainly makes you step back and question what has college basketball at the really high levels become. Because it, you know, college sports, when you go back 50, 70, 90 years, it wasn't a big money endeavor. And that's where I think sometimes the student athletes, let me put it another way, if you're a 16-year-old and an agent on the street says, hey, come on over here, I want to buy you a car, a lot of 16-year-olds may not know that's against NCAA rules. So I think, you know, the culture of, it's not just the kids who are taking the money, it's the coaches who are driving this, it's the agents who are driving it, but it's also the billion-dollar TV deals that in anything in life, when big money comes into play, oftentimes, sadly, there's corruption. And I do think it's one of the reasons that both Ruth and I love teaching here, or coaching here, that it provides us the opportunity in an environment that's sort of free of that. There's pressure to win and there's pressure to succeed, but we know we're going to be able to do it under the guise of all the rules and regulations in an ethical manner that truly puts the student athlete first.
Yeah, and another big conversation in the sports world right now is, you know, Fox News's Laura Ingraham told LeBron James to shut up and dribble when he started to, you know, voice his opinion about things. What do you guys think of this notion that athletes should just stick to being athletes? Because I know when I was a football player, if someone would told me, when I was on the football program with Coach Crusoe, someone would have told me, I'm just an athlete, you know, I don't know if I would have agreed with that. So what do you guys think of this notion that, you know, athletes should just stick to being athletes?
Well, in this day and age, I don't know that whole controversy, but I do think it's ironic that a lot of talking heads on the news, you know, who knows what they're experts about, right? So in this day and age, I think everybody has a voice for good or bad. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Charles Barkley said decades ago that athletes aren't role models, and I think at the end of the day, you know, they get to choose if they want to be a role model. But I certainly know as a kid growing up and still as an adult, some of the more inspiring stories you see, look at the Olympics and the men and women competing there, and you look at, you know, people daring to be great and willing to sacrifice so much to see how great they can be for their country and for themselves. So my long-winded answer is I think LeBron has a right to express his opinion like everyone else, and I certainly look at him as a really unique case of somebody who gets criticized, in my mind, way more than he should, for somebody who he hasn't been perfect in life, but you look at so many pro athletes, he hasn't had scandals. He had a $90 million shoe deal at age 18. How many of us, if we were 18 years old, would get a $90 million shoe deal and not make lots of really dumb decisions? Mm-hmm. And more than anything, I think he's incredibly unselfish with the ball. So I thought that was pretty short-sighted to say athletes don't have a voice. Whether or not people want to listen to him is their choice.
Mm-hmm. And I really feel that it should be a platform for them to be able to, as John was saying, be role models. I mean, we have so many young kids that, you know, that's what they want to do is be in the NBA or, you know, be in the WNBA. And they need to take that responsibility. We talk to our athletes all the time about making sure that they make good choices and hold themselves to high standards. Because I think we need more role models for our young kids today. So I really feel that our athletes, I mean, you'd look at March Madness. Well, everybody loves March Madness. Why? Mm-hmm. Because they love sport and they love Deering greatly. And there is a responsibility for that. I disagree with the idea that just because they're athletes that they're not role models. No, they need to take that responsibility and understand how important it is.
Mm-hmm. When you guys first started getting into coaching, who were some of your coaching idols and some of the programs that you wanted to model your program after?
Well, one of them that I really like is Sherry Cole from Oklahoma. She was a high school coach, and she was an English teacher, and she got into the game because she just loved the game. Oklahoma actually was in a situation that they discontinued their women's basketball program because they had scandal and things, and so they pulled her from the high school ranks to come in and coach. And if you ever follow her program, the athletes are first. And I don't know if there's a lot of Division I programs where the athletes are first, just like what we were saying with all the money and the influence and things like that. That takes it away. That's what I enjoy that we get to do, John and I, is that the people are first. The game is never more important than the people. And Sherry Cole does that. And she always talks about the importance of the journey and the process in each of these girls' lives. So she would be one of them that I really admired and patterned some of the things that I do after.
Yeah, that's a fun question to think about. I mean, I think growing up in the Midwest, and I went to graduate school at the University of Wisconsin, so I was there the 5 years Dick Bennett was there. And so I think playing for Steve Fritz and then watching a lot of Dick Bennett's practices and early teams there, and then Bo Ryan, I've stayed connected to their program. You know, it's sort of stereotypical Midwest basketball, but it's be tough with the ball, play really solid defense, be unselfish, and as cliche as all those things sound, I mean, basketball, you can make it really complicated, mm-hmm. or you can make it really simple, and at the end of the day, I mean, we always tell our guys three-word phrases, get the ball, keep the ball, score the ball. You know, and that sounds like a little kid's game in third grade recess, but it really is. Your first job is defend and go get a rebound or a steal. The second job is now kind of play keep away and don't turn the ball over. And then you got to score the ball at the end of the day. But I always felt like those coaches, from Coach Fritz to Bennett to Bo Ryan, all had different kind of principles and systems, but their overarching values I think impacted me in almost indirect ways that I didn't know, where just you sort of take for granted this is the right way to play. Whether we're pressing or we're playing more half court, those three themes aren't gonna waver.
We got one last question for you guys. Lauren Andreger, our producer, take it away.
Hi guys.
Hey Lauren.
Hey, it's fun to hear you guys talk about these sort of topics that we don't really get into on the locker room and game interviews and stuff like that. So I've got another one that I think everyone in the basketball world has some sort of an answer for. Who's the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan or LeBron James?
I like Mike. I like Michael Jordan. He's always been one of my favorites. There's a great case for LeBron, but to me, Michael Jordan, he's so athletic, and you know he does so well. He brought Chicago all the way through. So I would go Michael Jordan.
I swear, I had more hours of debate with friends over this one, and I'm a huge LeBron fan, and I also loved watching Michael growing up. It's hard to compare across eras, right? And I mean, LeBron, you've got this 6'8", 250-pound point guard for all intents, and he can play. So I think he's the most versatile player I've ever seen. I think the thing that he doesn't have the same as Jordan is he doesn't have the same scorer's mentality, the alpha male, I'm going to make the big play at the end of the game. I think LeBron's still looking to make the right play, and it's hard to argue against Jordan's 6 championships. So you don't want to get me started on that question because we could be here for hours and hours. But it is a fun thing to try and figure out. Even within our programs, our former players will come back and say, who's the best shooting guard that's ever played? You know, and as a coach, you stay 10 miles away from those because you love them all and you love hearing them debate.
Yeah.
But so they're fun questions. I try to stay away from those.
Thank you, guys. That's all the time we have, but thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you for doing
this.
Fun to be here.
All right, a big thanks again to Coach Tower and Coach Sin for joining us on the podcast. I think, Brady, that we can tally up Coach Tower for LeBron. What do you think?
Yeah, we can give him a tally in that category. I think it's 2-1
2-1
with Sin and Dave Schwartz.
All I'm saying is we're going to have some, you know, kids from our generation to come on because we need that LeBron tally to go up a little bit more.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. We're in the age range that we've been interviewing so far. Those people kind of grew up with Jordan, and that was their player to watch. So it's going to be hard to get to
generational.
Get more. Yeah, it is. It's a generational debate, but we'll see where that goes. Moving into some of the logistics behind women's basketball, they have a home set this weekend. They got the home hosting for the NCAA tournament in the first round. They played Chapman on Friday game. I know you've looked into Chapman a little bit. They're from California. What do we need to know about them?
Chapman's on a 15-game win streak, and as you know, Brady, St. Thomas is on an 18-game win streak right now. So, you know, it's a battle of the win streaks. One of them has to end, obviously, so that'll be interesting to see. Chapman is 23-4 overall. They're a good team. And the winner of that game will play Chicago versus Wisconsin Lutheran, which St. Thomas played Chicago last season in the second round and barely squeaked by with a 73-69 win. So, you know, Coach Sin was telling us before we did the interview yesterday that these four teams that, you know, they have to get past are probably like the four toughest teams to get past in the first two rounds. So it should be a good test for the team. Coach Sin was really looking forward to it. And, you know, Spalding is back. Hannah Spalding.
She will play on Friday.
Yep, she passed the concussion protocol. She's the team's leading scorer this year. She leads all NCAA divisions in field goal percentage at over 71%. So it's going to be huge to have her back in the lineup.
And then the men's hoops, they ended their season last week with a conference tournament loss to Augsburg on the road. And then women's hockey, men's hockey, both their season ended as well in conference tournament with the women not being able to go to the postseason and the men losing in the finals. The final game, I believe, of the Maya Conference Tournament, so they did not get a postseason bid. But now spring sports are starting to get going,
Baseball and softball. Softball will start their season this weekend in Arizona. Mm-hmm. I know me and you would both love to take a trip to Arizona.
Yeah, why are we
right
not
I know,
Arizona
why aren't we covering this game?
Yes.
But they have 6 games in Arizona this weekend, so their season will be starting. And baseball will start their season next week at U.S. Bank Stadium, which will be very fun. They have 2 doubleheaders against Wisconsin Lacrosse and Wisconsin Oshkosh next week. So
fun to get baseball going. The weather's warming up. Baseball weather's kind of in the
air. Knock on wood.
Hoping we can get some outdoor baseball games in the next couple months. That would be fun. That's kind of our show today.
Yeah.
Got anything else?
I don't believe so.
Lauren, anything else?
Do you want me to tell a joke?
Sure.
Not... I don't think I have any podcast appropriate jokes.
Come on, Lauren.
That's what we got for you guys today. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.